This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
What is up, Straight Fire fam? It's me, Jason McIntyre. Straight Fire for Thursday, October 7th. And who doesn't love some October baseball? Postseason in full effect. What a night in Major League Baseball. The Dodgers walk it off in the bottom of the ninth. Just dramatic, fun, excitement. The bedlam, the chaos out here in LA last night was phenomenal. No, I did not go to the game. Yes, I had some buddies who went. I opted to play soccer because, as some of you know, I'm in a dad's soccer tournament this weekend. Had to get in some run. If you want a funny story that's not Dodgers related, your boy's so nervous about getting an injury because I think I told you guys I was playing pickup 2 weeks ago with a buddy, and he makes a move at the top of the key, goes down, and he loses the ball, and somebody picks up the ball and goes the other way. He goes, wait, stop, foul. Somebody kicked me. And everybody is like, oh. And everybody kind of knew because it was non-contact. He just lost the ball. This guy played college basketball at Purdue all 4 years. I mean, I think he started 1 year, maybe 1.5 years, whatever. And it was his Achilles. So since then, I've been like extra safe, doing all this stretching. And I found this this thing called Stretch Lab. I don't know if it's a chain or whatever, but you pay like money for $25 and you can go stretch it out. So I went and stretched before I played soccer yesterday. I'm stretching today. And then the tournament's this weekend. So I want to be fully, fully ready so I don't get injured. So I did miss most of the game. I got home just in time to watch the walk-off, which is pretty nice. No injuries in soccer, which was even better. But more importantly, that sets up Dodgers-Giants. Just a phenomenal West Coast NLDS series. It should be really, really excellent. Already hit up some friends for, hey, if you're going, me and my son would definitely join you guys. You know, pay whatever. Because, like, I'm not out there hunting for tickets. My son and I did go to a World Series game. I think it was 2017 or 2018, 2017, I'm pretty sure. And that was just a great experience. But it's always fun, October baseball. And listen, this is a great week for sports. Coming up here shortly on the podcast, we have a guy I worked with, Edward Egros, very analytical. He was up to preview the baseball postseason last year. He's at FanDuel. He was on a TV show with me called More Ways to Win with Lisa Kearney, Dave Weaver, and It's fun. He's into analytics, so he talks a lot of baseball. We recorded before the Dodgers game yesterday, and he'll preview some of the games upcoming. He kind of likes the White Sox. That's two guys this week who came on here really vibing the Chicago White Sox. I'll give a best bet for Thursday Night Football at the end of the pod, but me personally, I'm not betting on baseball unless somebody tells me, hey, I got something here, because I just haven't bet all year. I'm not just going to go start flushing money for fun just to have action. I feel like I'd rather put money on Thursday Night Football props, which I will do, as I do every Thursday on Instagram stories a couple hours before the game. But yeah, I'll give my Thursday Night best bet for Rams Seahawks. Should be a good one. Listen, it doesn't get much better than this, folks. Okay? NBA preseason started this week. You had Yankees Red Sox, on Tuesday. You had Dodgers-Cardinals on Wednesday. You have Thursday Night Football and two baseball games today. You have more baseball Friday. You have college football Saturday, baseball. Then Sunday, you have an awesome slate of NFL and baseball. It's like, this is just an awesome week for sports. I hope you guys are strapped in and ready. Without further ado, let's get to our guest, Edward Egros of More Ways to Win and Bally Sports.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
You know a guy.
Jason likes to think he knows everything when it comes to sports.
I know what sports fans want.
But for everything he doesn't, he knows a guy who does.
Let's just say I know a guy who knows a guy who knows another guy.
All right, let's welcome into Straight Fire. You remember him last year, previewed the baseball playoffs with us, and he's now in L.A. He has made the trek from Texas out to the sunny Los Angeles. He teaches at Pepperdine. He does the FanDuel show More Ways to Win with Lisa Kearney, a show I was on. That's how I got to know Ed. And he's working for Bally Sports as well. Big time gambler, analytical guy, Edward Egros. Ed, how are you?
Doing well, doing well. Loving life in Los Angeles. I wish you could have convinced me to come out here sooner and put the hammer down there because I'm having a blast.
Yeah, it's funny. Every single person, once you get out here within 6 months, you're like, damn, why'd I wait so long? And I know, Ed, are a lot of people, were your friends in Texas being like, yeah, you don't want to go to California, all those weird crunchy people and the Hollywood types. And did you get a lot of that? And then you get out here and you're like, yeah, this is awesome.
It kind of, you know, certainly the stigma was there that I had to kind of overcome. I think the bigger thing for me was the distance, being so far away from everyone else. That was probably the bigger issue that a lot of people brought up because, being in Dallas for so long, have a lot of friends there, families in Louisiana. And the big thing was, why do you want to be out there? And I think also, too, when you hear about, say, the fires or the earthquakes or things like that those things happen all the time. And you need to be aware of it and you need to have plans in place if something happens, but every area has a problem. You can have hurricanes in parts of the country, tornadoes, winter storms, things like that. California is no different as far as buffering itself from whatever problems may exist. But once you get past that part, the people have been super nice. The weather's been unbelievable. I finally have a rhythm as far as where I need to be and where to go and places to eat, things to do.
Yeah. It's funny. My parents, since we got out here, have expressed interest. They're like, oh, but the earthquakes. I'm like, listen, you're in Florida. You do know it's 100 degrees and humid for like 4 straight months, maybe 5, you know. And then, as you said, tornadoes, other places, hurricanes, like everywhere's got problems. Okay. Yeah, whether it's Florida social unrest in the Pacific Northwest, wherever. But again, at least you could be by the beach out here. Anyways, all right, let's get to gambling. Everybody wants to know. First of all, we're not going to talk too much about my Yankees. We record this on Wednesday. They lost last night. It's over for them. I'll be rooting heavily for the Rays. If memory serves, you were a big Rays guys a couple years ago when they were analytically driven and made a run. But I do want to talk about the big games tonight. White Sox Astros, obviously a massive one, and then Red Sox Rays. Any leans in the series or to jump off things for game one in either one?
Yeah, as far as the series is concerned, I feel comfortable with the dog here going with the White Sox over the Astros. One of the big factors that I look at as far as predicting postseason success, because the postseason very much is different than the regular season on a variety of fronts. But one of the big factors is bullpen war, bullpen ERA, bullpen advanced stats, whatever you're looking at. That's what I care a lot about. It's one of the reasons why I backed the Rays last season considerably. Turned out well for them, except the little thing happening in game six, that little deal.
Right.
The important thing is bullpen war matters a good bit and should be stressed as far as any kind of postseason predictor that you're putting together.
Okay, Time out. Why bullpen war versus starting pitching, at bat, a slugging percentage on base? Why bullpen war number one?
Well, it's up there for me because you are making many more chess match kind of moves in a series. And, especially in today's baseball, starting pitchers are not going nearly as deep as they used to. And you're going to have starters come in relief. You're going to have sort of your fourth or fifth guy, come on in various places, especially if you're getting to the deciding game, say like the game five of an LDS or the game seven of an LCS or a World Series, you see a lot of wacky pitching moves. And so because you're basically having an all hands on deck kind of mentality, which you should, what happens with those relievers matters that much more than, say, expecting a starter to go six or seven, even if, say, he doesn't necessarily have his best stuff. And so reliever war is that much more important than, say, what it normally would be in the regular season. It's why I backed the Rays last year. I still think the Rays are going to be pretty good this go round. Mm-hmm. But another team I like, it's the Chicago White Sox. When you look at Fangraphs war, the Rays, I think, are first at 7.9 wins above replacement. White Sox are at 7.8, just a tenth of a win behind them. And that's in large part because of Liam Hendricks, more than 14 Ks per nine innings pitched. Not an overpowering fastball by him, but the placement for him is amazing. They also picked up Craig Kimbrell for relief work, not necessarily as the big closer for them, but that matters a good bit. Hendricks' second best expected WOBA of any pitcher in baseball, just behind Jacob deGrom. that bullpen is absolutely stout, and it's going to matter a good bit, especially against a scary offensive lineup as far as the Astros are concerned. But I think the White Sox can pull this off.
Now, you said WOBA. I confess to not knowing what that is. And I will say this. There's a lot of new gamblers who listen to this pod. EPA in the NFL is one I don't dive into much, but I'm starting to hear. I heard it some last year, and now I'm hearing it a lot this year. But I don't know, like WOBA. Can you tell the audience what that is or where they should seek it out?
Yeah, absolutely. So WOBA is, think about it like slugging percentage. So, you know, we'll start there. Slugging percentage, a single is worth one, a double is worth two, triple is worth three, home runs worth four, and then you divide it by the total number of at-bats. WOBA says, okay, maybe a double isn't worth quite two. Maybe a triple isn't quite worth three because sometimes you don't score, or maybe there are ballpark factors that matter, or, you know, the pitching you go up against, or there are league factors as far as a league that is more offensively driven or more pitcher friendly, whatever it is. WOBA says, okay, we tweak those coefficients slightly, what you multiply a double by, which multiply a home run by, and then you get a truer representation of overall offensive success. So it's just a little more precise than, say, slugging percentage.
Wow, that's deep.
Yeah, and what I do is I take it one step further and I say, okay, WOBA's great, but I also want something that's more predictive, that's going to tell me, you know, that next step. Okay, you may have a good WOBA, but are you going to have a good WOBA tomorrow? Are you going to have a good one for the postseason, next year, whatever it is? And when you take a look at sort of those physical elements like exit velocity, launch angle, sprint speed, those kinds of things, and you bake that into, say, probabilities of getting a double, triple, home run, whatever it is, then you get expected WOBA. Mm-hmm. And that tends to be more predictive than, say, your basic box score stats that you finagle a little bit here and there.
Yeah. And predictive is the key word to all of this, because like you said, like anybody can break down a box score and look at the numbers, but which ones of them are predictive? Is there anything in the NL on the predictive side? Obviously the White Sox, you seem to like a lot. What about in the NL? Anything on Braves Brewers?
Braves and Brewers is interesting because when you look at the Brewers, you know, we talked, you know, I know baseball's talked a good bit about sort of this hot streak that the Cardinals went on going into the postseason. But when you look at the time frame of, say, since June 1st, it's the Brewers who have had the best record. So the question is, okay, what's your time window that you care about in terms of streakiness? Do you care about a team that won a bunch of games late in the year, or do you want a team with a better overall record than everyone else after some sort of key cutoff date? June 1st might make the most sense. And so why not go with the Brewers there? Starting rotation, really, really strong. No doubt about that. The hitting is a big question mark. You know, Corbin Burns, you know, starting pitcher for the Brewers, unbelievable. One of the top performances, you know, this season. Brandon Woodruff, Freddie Peralta, all great. The hitting is going to be a big question mark for the Brewers. I think they can manage that as far as one series is concerned. It's not what I'm not necessarily comfortable with them as a pennant champ because I need more hitting. I need to see more WOBA out of the hitters, so to speak. And I really have
love it.
Yeah, but at the same time, the pitching is enough for me to feel comfortable that, yeah, they can at least take one series.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
All right, so now, obviously, baseball has been a big one for you, but you also do, obviously, NFL and college football. We'll get to NFL in a minute, but Ed, I need to ask about the biggest college football game this weekend. No, not Iowa, Penn State. That's obviously big. But Texas, Oklahoma, being a Texas guy, I will confess I have I won on Texas earlier this year. And then like an idiot, I had them against Arkansas. Did not end well. And Oklahoma, one of the craziest stats, Ed, they're 0-4 against the spread against FBS opponents. How do you handicap? What are they calling it these days? The Red River Shootout, the rivalry? What's the terminology?
I think it's now the showdown.
Showdown. Okay, got it.
Yes. I keep forgetting every year, and then they change it, and then if you don't change with it, then someone will call you and get mad at you from the Cotton Bowl. No, it's interesting because when you look at Oklahoma's offense, you mentioned EPA briefly. Well, Oklahoma's offensive EPA per play is 25th in America. 25th isn't bad, but when you look at the expectations for Spencer Rattler coming in with Heisman expectations, being the favorite there in the market, 25th isn't good enough.
No.
And we've played enough of a season to conclude that, okay, Spencer Rattler's not a bad quarterback, but is he an elite, if not phenomenal quarterback? I don't know if we can say that yet. Defensively, Oklahoma's had some question marks to where they're getting into closer games than perhaps they should. It's one of the reasons why, yeah, can they beat Texas? Sure. I'm not necessarily concerned about that. But are you backing Oklahoma the rest of the way? I certainly wouldn't at this point.
Right.
And if they wind up winning the Big 12, that may be more an indictment on the state of the conference than it is, say, anything else, because this is not Oklahoma's best shot to go after a national championship, at least not yet. Now, as far as this particular game is concerned, the way I'm betting it is taking the under. And this is not something I've necessarily researched very much, over the course of the Red River Showdown rivalry, something or other. But what I have done and what I have noticed, though, is that there's always at least one, if not both teams, coming in with a phenomenal offense, or at least a highly touted offense. Oklahoma's had it for a few years. Texas has had it in spurts. It's always been there, and it's always led to a high total. And it's always seemed to me like it underperforms as far as that's concerned. And especially with the state of this game, I am more comfortable taking the under, because I think what Texas wants to do is run the football a lot with Robinson, the running back.
That's all they can do.
Yeah, exactly. That is all they can do. But you know what? They can win games that way.
Yes.
And they probably want to keep the ball out of Spencer Rattler's hands enough. And so by limiting the number of possessions, you're probably not going to see as many points. I'm more comfortable with the under.
Yeah, it feels like the under's probably smarter, because this could be the game Oklahoma pops. I know it's like you're sitting there waiting, and it's not like you're sitting at the table in Vegas just waiting for in the roulette wheel to land on zero. You know, it's not quite like that, but eventually Oklahoma's going to put some numbers on the board, right? I thought it was against West Virginia, and geez, what? It was just such a bad performance. I wonder, Ed, do you think any of this NIL stuff is starting to wear on some of the players? Some of the big stars, Spencer Rattler apparently got a ton of money, haven't totally performed yet. And it's still early. What are we, a 5-6 weeks in the books? Do you think that is a factor at all in what's going on with Oklahoma, or are just defenses catching up to Lincoln Riley's offense?
I don't necessarily know if defenses are catching up. I just think that, you know, something isn't clicking for whatever reason. Whatever that is, I'm not exactly sure. But the defenses have been exploitable up to this point. And there have been a couple of instances where they have. But sometimes it's also a matter of having long fields, not necessarily getting defensive turnovers, those kinds of things, and eventually just not scoring as many points. That can happen. But as far as the NIL stuff, one thing that about that dynamic I think concerns me is not so much, say, like what the stars do. I think they make their money and they keep their heads down and then they do well. And I think that's fine. I do wonder, though, given how much hullabaloo there is, if there are certain people who have expectations that they were going to make a lot more than they really are. And so it's sort of that mid-tier where you're coming in and thinking, oh, I'm going to be making, you know, 5 figures, maybe close to 6 figures. And then you're not. And sponsorships aren't exactly rolling in, or if they are, they're offering you a couple of bucks here and there. I got to think that disappointment might affect quality of play, maybe a little bit of self-confidence. But that's not necessarily something I'm expecting from the star players, the guys that we're going to be talking about on a regular basis. It's that mid-tier that maybe I have more concerns about as far as the NIL issue is concerned. But, you know, does money change somebody? Well, fame can change people. Money can change people, sure. But I also believe in the infrastructures of certain college football programs, like in Alabama, like in Oklahoma, to where they're able to keep, you know, their star players level-headed, and it doesn't become that big of a deal.
Also, props for using the word hullabaloo. Is it hullabaloo or hullaboo?
Hullabaloo.
Hullabaloo. Well done. Yeah, I think hullabaloo. That's the first time it's ever been said on the spot. I was just in my brain clicked. All right, so let's go. Do you have anything on Iowa Penn State? Because it feels like everybody's trying to outthink the room. Last week, I was on the outthink the room with, hey, Wisconsin, Michigan. I got to go with Wisconsin here. There's no way they're that bad. Michigan stinks, blah, blah, blah. Michigan wins by like 30. It kind of feels like people are saying, hey, Penn State's got to be the side here. Iowa's kind of fraudulent. I know the defense is good, but the offense, come on. Anything on this one?
Well, it's hard because the defense has been so good. Special teams have been really good for Iowa as well, to where the offense has had just short fields. And it doesn't mean that the offense is fraudulent. It just means we don't know. So, okay, big question mark. Fine. Do you trust this defense to continue playing as well as it has? I probably would at this point. Special teams, which is even more volatile. Sure, why not? Enough things there. And not to mention, too, Iowa's at home. And normally home field advantage doesn't matter to me very much, but especially when you're dealing with a tight spread of 1.5 that moved down from 2.5, that may be as simple as figuring out how many points a home field advantage is worth in today's college football.
Yeah.
If you can figure that out, you may be able to win this bet just by, you know, coming up with that particular number. And to me, I think home field advantage does matter a good bit in this one, especially given how well Iowa State has started out of the gate, going up against Penn State, having Big Ten aspirations. Ohio State already lost a game. Yeah, it was non-conference, but at least you have a little confidence and it keeps the fans generated and energetic. So yeah, why not take Iowa here?
Yeah, Penn State did look good in the opener at Wisconsin, but as we've seen, like, Wisconsin's not a good football team. All right, let's get to the NFL. Edward, first of all, how has the season gone? And now, it used to be that after week four, we're at the quarter mark, we can assess. I don't know if we could throw out priors of last season yet, but we have 4 weeks worth of data. Anything jump out at the page to you from a gambling perspective through 4 weeks, whether it's road dogs, the dregs of the league being really, really bad? Last week, I think we had 5 underdogs win outright. Anything jump out first before we get to the actual week 5 games?
Certainly. One big storyline to me is I love the Aaron Rodgers narrative because it's the ultimate example of not listening to the chatter and not turning this into, say, like a gossip contest. What matters a good bit more, you know, the overall quality, the talent coming in and making sure they can play up to snuff. And yeah, terrible, terrible first game for the Packers, but they picked up and they've been covering and they've been doing really well since then. And I, for the most part, expect that to continue. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers is going to slip up and have a clunker every now and again. But, you know, all the outspoken talk and is he going to stay there, those kinds of things. At the end of the day, it's football. And he's not going to tarnish his own legacy and, you know, prevent himself from future opportunities by tanking games or not playing as hard as he can or throwing picks or whatever it is. It was fascinating to me after week one, hearing all of these conspiracy theories and then him going out there and doing what he normally does and then continuing to do so to where it still felt like the market hadn't caught up to his overall true abilities. And I think there are a lot of examples of that where, you know, say like the rookie quarterbacks, for instance, they were historically bad coming out of the gate, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, et cetera. Then in week four, they all got better all at the same time. And you know what? That's normal. You're not going to have an entire class of rookies be that bad for that long. At some point, they're going to start figuring it out. Now, you know, what happens on the outside, that's a different matter. But now we can finally start to look at this objectively and not try and find these random intangible storylines to affect what are sharp numbers to begin with.
That's good. Can I toss out what's your take on the narrative building in Jacksonville? Urban's lost the locker room. Maybe they fire him. Is he committed? He didn't ride the plane back to Jacksonville. Everybody's freaking out. Listen, I'm not getting into it, Ed, but like, has any head coach ever been in their hometown where they spent many, many years and have businesses and family and said, you know what, I'm going to stay here as opposed to fly home? Like, I don't know if that has ever been an option before, but at any rate, Jags narrative, Tennessee this week and basically the season on the line.
Well, the funny thing is, they could fire Urban Meyer in the next few minutes and they'd still be in a good position to win that division.
Yeah. Yes. I love it.
Yeah. The Titans, look, I get there are questions at wide receiver, you know, and especially with injuries to the two key ones. Yeah. That's going to affect things, but Ryan Tannehill was pretty turnover prone to begin with. You look at his numbers last year. Yeah. He was able to escape, a lot of clunkers, you know, by not having, you know, turnover-worthy throws turn into interceptions. And the play-action game was always good to him. Now, all of a sudden, it's not. But again, the advanced metrics were pointing to this, that at some point, things were going to fall back down to reality. And that's exactly what's happened to the Titans. And look, I love the running game. I think Derrick Henry's phenomenal, one of the great running backs we've ever seen. But you cannot consistently win football games, even if he's, you know, rushing for 120 a game. You just can't do it. You got to complement the rushing attack. And at this point, they're just unable to do such things. So knowing this, and then knowing the disaster that's going on in Houston and in Indianapolis with, you know, its own quarterback issues, yeah, Jacksonville could make a change at head coach and still be in contention for this division. Don't let whatever concerns you have about divisional standings affect what you should do as far as the right thing is concerned at your head coaching spot.
Yeah, it looks like the line for Tennessee-Jacksonville is 4 at some of the perceived sharper shops, 4.5 at some of the other ones. Do you think professionals will come in on Jacksonville here? The big money bets?
It's possible. It's certainly possible. I probably would have liked to have seen a little bit more, from Trevor Lawrence, even though he certainly did a good bit in week 4. I mean, he had one of the higher QBR totals, from the past week, which is great. But, and also too, like, this Tennessee defense hasn't stopped very much up to this point.
Yeah,
and so this may be another opportunity for Trevor Lawrence to take a step forward. Wide receiver, great in Jacksonville. Lawrence has weapons. Probably want a little bit more out of the running back spot, but at the same time, you have enough there. The infrastructure is enough to feel comfortable. Now, part of the problem with me and say like what Urban Meyer has shown through 4 weeks, I mean, you remember that stuff, sort of that zone read that Trevor Lawrence had in the Thursday night game. You know, those are the kinds of things that kind of scratch your head as far as, okay, we need to see the innovative mind of Urban Meyer, and sometimes we don't. Is it because you're not comfortable with Trevor Lawrence yet? And you're trying to take that next step forward. Does your game not translate to the NFL? I don't know, as far as play design is concerned, but here is an opportunity, with an in-divisional game to possibly get something close and maybe pull off an upset win.
Brian Schottenheimer, I believe, is the OC in Jacksonville, and everybody who knows the Jets, my team, knows that he is a nightmare. And even Seattle Seahawks fans know that as well. Anything on game of the year, Ed? We'll wrap up with first Buffalo KC. My inclination here is to take KC if it's under a field goal at home. I'm not really a trend better, but I'm sure you've seen the numbers, teams that shut a team out 1 week and then come back the next week. There's usually some regression. And I think at some point the Chiefs defense has to improve, right? Again, I'm not waiting for it, but it's better than it has been, right? As soon as Frank Clark returns.
Certainly. But, when you're evaluating defense, what matters a good bit more is who you play, not necessarily the overall defensive ability. And, I think, the Sunday night game against the Ravens was a great example of that. I mean, the Chiefs had, a lot of turnovers, takeaways sort of fall in their laps, with Tyrann Mathieu. And still it wasn't enough. And so I look at this and go, Josh Allen is playing really, really well. Clunker out of the gate, but he's doing a lot of great things. Chiefs, Pat Mahomes, maybe he's slightly regressing than say, the phenomenal, last couple of seasons, but Tyreek Hill is spectacular. Travis Kelce is still arguably the best tight end in the game right now. This does seem to me like a shootout. Who will, basically last score wins maybe this kind of game. I'm super excited about it. Far more excited about this game than say the last Sunday night game.
Yeah.
But this may be a kind of coaching matchup where you're trying to time it to where you have the ball last. And who do you trust more as far as the coaching matchup is concerned? Well, that's a really tough one for me. Much as I love and respect Andy Reid and what he's been able to do, is he going to be out coaching a game like this? I think that's a fair question to ask.
Wow.
I don't know if it's true.
Wow.
But, that's just
I didn't see that coming.
Like, Buffalo's infrastructure is amazing in terms of pre-snap motion, play action, those kinds of things. And, this may be coach 1A and 1B as far as your power rankings are concerned. And so, I don't feel like I'm dogging on anybody. I mean, this is going to be one of the great quarterback coaching matchups that we're going to see all season long.
You look at the quarterbacks Buffalo's faced, right? So Ben Roethlisberger in the opener, we know he's not good. He's washed. Davis Mills last week, Jacoby Brissett in the shutout of Miami. And the other quarterback was Taylor Heineke. And you put all those guys together and they are probably all like bottom 10, bottom 12 quarterbacks in the league right now. And now you're facing basically number one in Mahomes. I wonder about that Buffalo defense. I would look at KC or nothing there personally.
I think that's fair. This does just sort of feel like a back and forth. I mean, if I'm going to play the game, I'd probably take the over.
I
think both offenses will shine here. That's probably my play here. Cause again, it feels like last score wins.
Mm-hmm.
However that occurs, is there one coach you necessarily trust to time it to where you have the ball last? Is that Andy Reid? I don't know. I have some real questions about that. Ooh. In part because the fourth down decision making for Andy Reid has always been a question for me. They don't go for it as often, and it's surprising because you have Pat Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Travis mm-hmm. Kelce. You've got this phenomenal, you know, offense, some of the great playmakers we've ever seen, and you still opt for field goals more often than you should. And I look at those things and sort of question, you know, the whole thing, so to speak. Knowing you're going to be in a shootout, are you going to time it out and, you know, have defensive plays ready to go to where you're going to have the ball last, score, and then have no time for the other offense to score again? That's right. The question for me. Who do you trust more in that spot?
Yeah, it's a fair question. Buffalo's still got to prove it. But let's just say the audience says, Ed, hey, give you $1,000. You have to take a side in any game this week. That's the only bet you're going to make. One side this week in the NFL. Where are you putting that money?
Oh boy.
Sure. One toughest side. Crack. Sides are, of course, tough. The totals, maybe you can find a larger edge. There's been some movement on the totals, but the sides are difficult. Where would you look this week?
And this is where I have to sort of remind myself what's going on and who's doing what.
Yeah. I got the lines in front of me if you want, if you have any questions.
Yeah, I have them here too.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, you know, the Saints -2.5 is interesting to me because while Taylor Heinicke has impressed me, Washington's defense has not. Mm-hmm. In large part because they have not been able to generate a lot of negative EV through the blitz. And you would expect, you know, a defensive line with that much talent to be able to send an extra rusher and then, you know, completely wreak havoc. And it really hasn't happened yet. Pass defense in terms of EPA, last I checked, is bottom half of the league. Not positive. I had to double check that. But especially going up against Jameis Winston and Sean Payton, I feel like this could be a good bounce back game for the Saints on the road. That's probably the one where I'm most comfortable.
Interesting.
If there is another one that I feel, you know, I'm also curious as far as like the quarterback situation in Denver. What can we see with Teddy Bridgewater? Is he going to be healthy enough? Oh. Because there is a significant drop off. Yeah. Bridgewater's great. I think he really is great. And especially with the receivers he has, Denver is a scary team to me. But the drop off between he and Drew Luck is substantial. And it's substantial enough to where if I somehow know that it's going to be Drew Luck playing that game or someone else, mm-hmm. then I'm backing the Steelers.
Yeah. I it's tough to bet on the Steelers right now because they're so bad, but Drew Lock is even worse. All right. He is Edward Egross. He, you can find his stuff. I mean, he's teaching at Pepperdine, which is pretty cool. What's the class, by the way?
Intro to Stats.
Wow. That's pretty cool. And Pepperdine, of course, located in gorgeous Malibu. You can still watch him on More Ways to Win. He's working for Bally Sports doing gambling. Basically he's everywhere. Ed, thanks a lot for the time and good luck this weekend.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right.
The only thing better than sitting on your couch watching the game is making money while you do it. Here's your best bet.
Good stuff from Ed. Very smart individual. And we didn't really talk about Rams Seahawks, but I want to give out my best bet for Thursday Night Football. Now listen, you guys, any gambler know there's a thing called regression. You run hot, you run cold, that's life. Nobody can hit it 80% the full season. It just doesn't happen. You could talk about it in Two for the Money with McConaughey and Pacino. That's fun to talk about and act, but the reality is it don't happen. And the fewer games you bet, the better chances you will have because you'll look for only where you find an edge instead of just tossing your money around because you have a feeling. I personally, earlier in the week, bet Rams -1.5, but it had juice. It was at -119. So it was like $119 to win 100. It's up to 2, and then there's some 2.5s out there. I'll talk you through my logic. I'm not a believer in this Seattle defense. I know they shut down Trey Lance. I get it. Guess what? Trey Lance was not prepared for this, and he's not a good quarterback. I really am not feeling Trey Lance, at least yet, as a quarterback. I look at the Seattle defense, and they got shredded by Ryan Tannehill, who put it on him in the second half in overtime, 6.4 yards per play. And Kirk Cousins moved the ball at will against them in the second half. And if you kind of play keep away, either with running the ball, which Derrick Henry did, and which Alexander Mattison did, you could keep the ball away from Russell Wilson. And that was what they were able to do. And Seattle did nothing in the second half in both those games. And if the 49ers don't vomit all over themselves, fumbling the kickoff when it was, I think, 7-7, maybe that doesn't flip like that. Obviously, you toss in the Jimmy Garoppolo injury, and San Francisco never really had a chance. But this is just an overrated Seattle team. They're living on borrowed time with this Legion of Boom. They're long gone. The home field advantage in Seattle isn't much. And I just want you to look at the last few matchups between McVay and Pete Carroll. The defense has dominated from the Rams. In the last four meetings with Seattle, they've sacked Russell Wilson 21 times. 5-5, 5-6. He holds the ball long because they confuse him. They're not going to get beat deep. They play the two high safeties. And there isn't a fear, a concern of anybody consistently beating you underneath. And that's what the Rams do. They did it to Tampa Bay. We will we'll let you run the football. Go ahead, Carson, whatever you want. We will let you catch the 6, 7, 8 yard passes, but we're not letting you beat us deep. We're not giving up the splash play to Lockett for 50. We're not giving up Metcalf for 75. And then offensively, the Rams move the ball at will because the Seattle defense stinks. So give me Matt Stafford coming off a loss, winning in Seattle. And again, home field advantage, we talked about it. I forget who was on here. It was either Baker a couple weeks ago, maybe Rufus Peabody, but the idea of home field advantage is just doesn't really mean what it used to. And I give me the Rams going into Seattle and Matt Stafford. I know he wasn't great last week against Arizona. By the way, Arizona has a better defense than Seattle. Arizona has better players, although Arizona is beat up. I don't want anybody to freak out, but go look at the Arizona Cardinals injury report from Wednesday. They are missing a ton of guys. Now, it's Wednesday, okay? Maybe they need a rest. This is a tough, very tough game, massive game against the Rams that they just took the down. They're now basically the best team in football. They're marked men. So maybe Arizona's resting up, but this NFC West is just such a gauntlet. I like the Rams to bounce back and beat the Seahawks. Feels to me like a 23-20, 27-23, something along those lines. I would like it up to 3, but at 3, you've kind of, I mean, I guess I would like it at 2.5 at the max, but at 3, you got to take Seattle, right? A home dog in the division getting a field goal, you got to take that. So that's why I got 1.5. I would take 2.5, but at 3, you probably got to look at Seattle. Either way, should be a good game. Enjoy the baseball. Enjoy Thursday Night Football, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.